And next on our show, we have a very special guest, indie developer Roger Precious, developer of the game Office Jerk, which is a big hit on iTunes. It was actually number one for 10 days, and the game Airport Madness. We're pleased to have him on the show today. And how you doing, Roger?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, it's not a problem. We appreciate having you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Terrific.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and your story and how you got to where you're at today.
Sure. As you mentioned, I run a game development company called Big Fat Simulations, which is air traffic control games and simulations. But what I really do, I'm a 20-year air traffic controller, which is really my passion. I absolutely love all things air traffic control. It's got to be the coolest job, or one of the coolest jobs in the world. Basically, I play a game for a living, which is pretty fun. When I discuss my business, though, people always say to me, "Oh, you're a game developer. That's nice." But I always explain to them that in real life, like in my real life, I'm an air traffic controller. And this business was really nothing more than just a little side hobby, which has grown to the point that it basically competes for my time just as much as my full-time job. I started into game development, though, just 5 years ago. I'm an instructor at my control tower, and so when we get new trainees, they work with me for a few months. And I was trying to find a way to make the transition easier for them, so I made a simulator using Adobe Flash technology, and I was able to kind of simulate what happens in an air traffic control environment. And I think it was pretty well received. I think my coworkers and the trainees appreciated that. And so I decided to create kind of a generic simulator and just sort of put it out there into the worldwide web, and it was called Radar Chaos. And I'll tell you honestly, most people don't really like air traffic control games. It's kind of a niche market. The flight simulator community loves my games, but they're a tough sell. Come to think of it, I don't think I have any friends or coworkers that actually like my air traffic control games.
Yeah.
Well, I like my games, I guess. But Google is catching these people out there that are typing in air traffic control game, and they find me. So I like Google very much.
Wow.
So what I kind of learned from that little experience where I was making that radar game was that I needed to take this air traffic control concept and just somehow water it down, simplify it, dumb it down so that it's mainstream enough for anyone to play. And so Airport Madness was born. Airport Madness actually successfully passed the mom test. I got my mom to play it. She was able to take her mouse and merrily control air traffic like she was playing Angry Birds. So I guess I did something right. So I've made 5 versions of Airport Madness. It's been really exciting. And the latest version is called Airport Madness Time Machine. And the idea there is that you're air traffic controlling at a tiny grass field back in 1925. And there's Curtis Jennings landing on the grass. And each level is a new year. And sure enough, you get to 1970 where it's a major international. And there's Concords colliding with 747s. And it's kind of fun.
That's fun. That sounds awesome.
You mentioned the mom test.
Yeah.
That I guess for most developers is a test they never even pass, you know. So for you to get there, how old is your mom, if you don't mind me asking?
She is 66.
66 years old.
That's
for
right.
A 66-year-old woman to pick up a game, I don't know how complicated it is. I mean, I've touched on it a couple of times, but I guess it would seem complicated to somebody who's never played games before. It was well received by her. That had to be a major accomplishment for you.
Well, it is my mom, and what's she going to say? Of course she's gonna tell
I hate it.
She can tell you she hates it. You're gone.
Well, you're a genius. Yeah. She told me I was a genius, and I just had to. I assume that's correct.
you could have just remade Pac-Man, and she would have said it was awesome.
Yes.
As long as you tried hard, Roger. As long
that's
as you
right.
tried hard, right?
That's all that matters. Yeah.
That's right. So I've got some pretty strong fans going now. And they aren't afraid to ask for features either. I get emails from people saying, "Oh, can you add a holding pattern feature? And can you add another feature?" But I always tell them this game is tough enough to sell. It's already too much. So
yeah.
I'm not trying to add features. I'm not trying to make this more realistic. I'm trying to make it playable for my mom. I want people to be able to play this thing, and it needs to be mainstream.
You're not trying to alienate people at all.
Right.
That's right, and I'm doing a pretty good job so far.
So, one question I have is your partnership with Fluic, how did that come about?
Well, I needed to get my Airport Madness game into the mobile space because this was 2010 when we started shifting over to iPhone. And I knew it was time to make the leap from computers to mobile devices. So I met a gentleman named Victor Ruba from Fluic Entertainment. And he's a genius. He's a really nice guy as well. And he liked the game. And he suggested a partnership of 50-50, whereby I pay only half and we split the profits. And it worked out well. It worked out well. We made a second game, two Airport Madness games. And but what I'd love to tell you about, if I've got a couple more minutes here, that one day something very interesting happened with Victor and I. We were sitting at an IHOP in Edmonton, and we were talking about Airport Madness and where it was going to go. And he asked me, what else have you got in the way of ideas? So I showed him this one idea that was a real departure from my air traffic control stuff. I called it Office Jerk, and the whole idea of this stupid game is to see if you can hit your coworker in the head with various objects. So you take a red stapler and you huck it, and you see if you can hit him in the head. And he absolutely loved it. And so we sat there for 4 hours as we fleshed out this game onto a notepad.
In IHOP.
Well, we ran out of napkins, so we had to borrow a notepad from the waitress. And we were furiously scribbling notes, and the game wound up being not exactly what I'd made in the first place, but Victor and I kind of put some additional creativity into it. So we got to work on it, and it was very expensive to make. It was 3D graphics on a mobile device, and it's a little easier now to do that. But at the time, to build version 1.0, we burned through about 50K. Wow. And Apple rejected us. Yeah, it was kind of a depressing day because in one hand I had a rejection notice from Apple saying, "Dear valued developer, thank you for your recent submission. Please take a hike." And in the other hand, I had this bill for development costs. And so I was starting to feel like a real world game developer. And so we cleaned up the app. We took out the blood for one thing. That was probably the smartest thing we could have done. Remove all blood. Children don't like that. So we started getting decent downloads right away once Apple accepted us.
Wow.
And we about a week after we launched, I got the call from Victor. And he told me that we were in the top 100 games on the App Store in North America. So I jumped out of my chair and ran to my computer and logged into iTunes. And sure enough, number 83 and climbing. And this day after day, we continued to climb, until we finally broke top 10 and kept climbing to the point where we, at the time, EA Games had this awesome new golf game that was firmly planted at number one and it wasn't going anywhere. So we were stuck at number two for a couple of days, and then eventually we landed on the moon. We got to number one and we stayed there, 72 countries worldwide for 10 days, number one app, and it was just phenomenal. It makes me laugh when I think about that first bill that I got sent for the development costs.
I mean, the sheer number of apps, and I think most of those apps are games on the App Store. That's an accomplishment of ridiculous proportions. I mean, you think about some of the games that have hit number one. I mean, how long did Angry Birds, the original, hold number one? You had Cut the Rope, Burn the Rope, yes. Where's My Water? You know, most of the number, I bet you if I go in the App Store right now and look at the top 10 games, at least 8 of them are going to be, or top 10 apps, 8 of them are going to be games. And and to break into that. Now, what year was this? How early are we talking in iPhone-wise? What version iPhone are we talking about?
This came out for iPhone 3GS, I believe, and it was 2011, early 2011.
Yeah. So, Roger, I just want to tell you that since you mentioned the game, I went on Android Marketplace and downloaded it.
Yep.
And it's freaking awesome, man. I just got an ear pencil. I just threw a pencil and hit the guy in his ear with the pencil. And
that's fantastic.
the pencil stuck. The pencil stuck in his ear. I mean, I feel like I accomplished something, but this game was pretty...
because I can't do that. I suck at my games. It's very frustrating.
You know, that's always been a thing. Like, when I was a kid, I always thought, you know, when I was palling around with my friends, that the game developers would be able... They would know all the secrets, and they'd know how to beat this game, like, flawlessly.
Developer and, code.
Yeah. Have, not even so much a code to beat it, or... You know it in and out so well that they were obviously the best at the game. I mean, you made it, but as I've grown older and talked to more and more developers, I realize that is not the case at all.
That's right. Especially when you've got a big team. I'll just finish my little intro by telling you that things got very complicated when we realized we had to keep adding. And this team at Fluic were busy adding features, and I was kind of the odd man out. I was in my town, which is a 14-hour drive away, trying to act like I was a partner by flying up there every week. But really, all the momentum was in this office, and they were adding features, and I had no clue what was going on. I didn't recognize the game anymore.
To beat an old cliche, I mean, like, how did that make you feel?
Well, I felt very threatened. It was nobody's fault. It's just how it was. The momentum was in this office.
I mean, it was your baby. I mean, it was an idea that came to you and that you nurtured from... Napkin and IHOP.
From IHOP.
Yeah, that's right. And it just had to, it had to happen like it did. And Victor took a lot of risk too. He basically let go of a lot of consulting work to focus exclusively on this app. So we were all kind of terrified by this monster. And eventually we decided it made sense for me to either get on board or get run over, kind of thing. Either I moved to Edmonton or give 3 solid days a week there, which wasn't going to happen because of my air traffic control job.
And you're a family man, correct?
Oh, yes. And I've got a family. Yeah. Awesome. That's right. I fit them in between 7 and 7:30 p.m. Yeah. But I finally decided it was best to just sell the app to the company. And that's what I've done. And it's worked out well for all of us, I think. And I've gone back to making air traffic control games. And I'm working on some new cool stuff, office jerk-like type stuff.
Now, I'm not going to lie. Like, everybody in this podcast, we're the hardcore gamers. We're the ones that ingest and read games because it's our hobby. And this isn't necessarily, I guess Ron Ellis is the exception. Office Jerk wasn't necessarily the app that appealed to me. You told me about it when we talked a little bit yesterday. And full disclosure, I am an air traffic controller as well, although that is not how I met Roger. I was searching through my own iPhone app, searching for great interviews for this podcast, and started sending emails and got an email back from Roger because Air Traffic Madness was one of the games in my iPhone. But back on topic, you know, this isn't one of the games that probably us three are going to download. And I was thinking about that when I was playing it today. And I was mentioning it to a buddy of mine at a wedding earlier. And he got all excited. He's like, you know Office Jerk? And I was like, I've never heard of this game. And he's like, you've heard of this game? And he's like, yeah. He's like, my son loves this game. He has an 11-year-old son. And his name is Grant, and he knows all the secrets about this game. He knows how to throw the plane to get it to land on the desk, how to get the stapler to land in the cup, and it was exciting to this 11-year-old kid. He's like, you're going to talk to the guy who made Office Jerk? And I think us, you know, being where we're at in our gaming careers, for lack of a better word, we're remiss from that. You know, we don't have that childlike... you know, wonder about games that we used to. You know, we're huge critics of even the tiniest things.
We're too busy analyzing the games to enjoy them sometimes.
To interject a bit on Jerry's point about the 11-year-old loving the game, see, I kind of look at it through the eyes of an 11-year-old sometimes because I have kids and I have a 10-year-old. And my phone is always in their hands. I mean, we discussed it on a previous show. And when I play when I play Office Jerk, when I just put it on and turned it on, I'm like, my kids would love this, you know? And if it's something they would love, I know I have to play it with them, you know? So it's pretty awesome to me. So as hardcore as I am when I game, I'm still casual with my kids because, you know, I have to download the casual games as well. So it's kind of like a balance thing with me, but I think it's awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Now, another thing before I forget, I think the Office Jerk, or I guess, are you the Office Jerk in the game because you're the one throwing the stuff at the guy?
That's funny. We've been accused of stealing the character from The Office.
That's where I was going. That looks like Dwight.
Yeah,
looks like
Dwight. I the visuals for that came from an artist somewhere, so I guess we'd have to ring her and ask her, is that who you were trying to model after? But the original idea was that he was the jerk sitting in his seat. He's the one that's got the employee of the month, and he's the one that's waving at his cat picture every 5 seconds. So he's the jerk. He needs a stapler. It's a bullying app. That's one thing I kind of struggle with, is that it's a bullying app. But it was actually meant to be something a little more complex in the first place. But it just, if it had been anything else, it wouldn't have had its success.
I mean,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it blows my mind, but you know, just opens my eyes just a little bit more to what people like.
I have a question for you though. Is Airport Madness going to come to Android market?
Well, I've actually sold the mobile rights to the game to Fluid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's so I'm not sure what their plans are with it. I'm pushing it pretty hard with PC and Mac, because what I'm seeing is that there's still people out there. There are people out there that still have computers, believe it or not.
Yeah.
People are still playing.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it.
We talked a little bit earlier off the air that you came in contact with Steam's Greenlight program. You dabbled in it a little bit.
That's right.
Is that something that you might be interested in the future?
Yes. There's just not enough hours in the day to pursue all these avenues. I get so many people telling me, how come you're not using Unity to make your games? Or how come you're not getting onto Steam? Or how come you're not doing this? And there's so much that I need to do. And I could start hiring people to help me, but I really believe that I'm doing things as efficiently as I can, being a one-person show. My costs are zero, and I'm trying to find enough time to do this.
You're as indie as indie gets.
Yeah, I'm
pretty much.
That's right. That's how I describe myself. I don't have a 26-story tower in downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
So is there any point in time that you see yourself actually stopping being an air traffic controller and moving full-time into gaming? Or are you satisfied with the level of involvement that you have at this point?
My job offers a great deal of security, not to mention benefits. Game development for independent developers like me is always rather hit and miss. You never know how your game's going to do. But the main reason I don't think I'd leave my job is because I love my job. It's where I've gotten all my inspiration for my games, like Airport Madness and Radar Chaos. So security would definitely have to drag me out screaming before I'd leave. One day I'm sure I'll be the old codger in the tower who just won't retire. So no, not likely that I'd leave.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Moving on to our last question for the interview. Where do you see indie games and the indie platforms moving into the future?
Well, there are huge advantages to being an indie game developer. When you're not a huge bloated team, you're pretty lightweight. You're agile. You can change your mind whenever you want. You can halt production, or you can double your speed if you want to. There's little overhead cost usually. And most important, there's no freaking meetings to waste your valuable time. It's just you and maybe an artist. A large team can easily get itself stuck. If a project gets too many people and too much investment behind it, it's pretty hard to alter the momentum when you realize 6 months prior to release, it's not going to be that great a game. So this freedom that indies have, it opens the doors to some serious creativity, which we've been seeing in the mobile app store for the past few years. There truly are some incredible ideas out there. I think creativity is really becoming unleashed now. I think the indies are putting pressure on the professional game development companies. I think we'll see some mind-blowing games in the future as indie developers continue to spread across all game platforms. On the flip side to that, I think we will also see the market become bloated with lots of crappy games.
Madness. I think we've seen that in the Apple App Store now.
Yes.
There's a whole lot of, I think the best word I've heard is shovelware. You know, you'll have a lot of gems in there, but then, you know, it seems like you'll have a lot of people in there just trying to trick you for a dollar.
That's right. Yeah. But you're seeing a lot more guys with laptops or gals with laptops at Starbucks making their own games now. And so there's definitely no shortage of creativity now. So,
well, it's just awesome being able to have so many people come to the field, and, you know, maybe we'll find more and more gems as we go.
I think so.
Awesome. Pretty cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Roger, from all of us here at Clutch Gaming Podcast. thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks, Roger.
Yeah, most definitely. Just want to say again that we appreciate you coming and sharing your story with us. And like I said, you know, before, that you still are an inspiration to us as, you know, creative people. And I'm pretty sure your story is going to inspire a lot of people, you know, who want to do some game development on the side as well and still keep their career.
Well, I sincerely hope so. Thank you. You're welcome.
Awesome.